Okay. So it's nice to see all the familiar faces and some new faces as well. That's great. I think this is a really good place to come, especially if you're just learning how to meditate, starting out. You can make your way down here and sit with the group and maybe hear some instructions and get some provide some feedback, ask some questions, and hopefully have some good answers. I know it's at the back here. You've got a whole stack of books. They're for purchasing, are they?
No, there's a library for people could take out.
Yeah.
And then there's books for purchasing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You've got the Happiness Through Meditation book there. I noticed. I think it came out in Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond. But I know they've changed the title. But I was going over it. I was having a bit of a flick through it the other day because I've got a weekend retreat coming up soon. So that's the weekend after next, 7th to the 9th. There's still a couple of seats spots left there if anyone's interested. So I've been doing a bit of reading, a bit of study on various kinds of meditation so I can deliver some sort of useful instructions, especially for beginners. So the weekend retreats are generally aimed at beginners or people who didn't get on the 9-day retreat. in the book up the back, it's called Happiness Through Meditation. It's by my teacher Ajahn Brahm, and I know we're always looking for a bit of variety here on a Tuesday night. So I was looking at the section on what Ajahn Brahm calls letting be meditation. Right. So the idea is to keep things simple, and I think this is a really good practice for people. Even if you're like me, you've been a monk for 9 years and agarika in training before that, it's nice just sometimes to sit down and rather than try and watch the breath or develop metta or do body sweeping, you can actually just enjoy just sitting down and letting things be. That might not seem particularly clear, but when we do the guided meditation, I think because it's such a simple practice, I think it should be very, very easy, especially for people who've never meditated before or looking for something else to use as their focus in meditation. Letting be, you're sitting down, you're in the room, and whatever comes, you let it be, and whatever goes, you let it be. This could be feelings in the body, aches and pains, or some nice tingly feeling, or memories and plans and things long gone. You just let them be, and they come, let them be, and as they go, you let them be. And there's not so much more to the practice than that. And that's a really nice thing. There's not all that much to do in the sense. I mean, it's the simile of the garden, the gardener, the wise gardener. The one not so wise gardener comes and says, "Oh, there's so much to do here. There's so much to fix up, to perfect." And your mind is like that garden, so you're trying to get rid of the thinking. It's always the thinking. No, it's too much thinking. But you let the thinking be. And you find that it just settles, it just drops and fades away, and it doesn't bother you anymore. So you don't need a perfect mind to meditate. Certainly, I don't have a perfect mind after after user practice. So it's okay. The smart gardener comes and sits down and says, "Well, I've done enough work. I've done enough work with my mind. So today, I'm just going to sit and enjoy my garden." That's pretty much the practice of letting be. You just sit, you enjoy the mind that you've cultivated. You cultivate it through meditation, but also through just your daily activities. The good things you do through the day, you can always give a bit of they're like the pretty flowers in the garden. All those nice things you've done for people, and the times you've gone out and done things you didn't particularly want to do, but you got to do them. So. Yeah, So that's pretty much it. There's not too much to think about. We're doing a guided meditation here, and I do think that if you're a new meditator, it's often good to maybe download some of the guided meditations. I assume we have quite a few on the website already for the Armadale group.
Yeah, we've got 2 years.
Okay, you've been recording for 2 years now.
Yeah.
So we've got a number of teachers come through here, various monks and just monks. You don't really have nuns here. No, we'll have to get them down here sometime. But various monks will come through here and they'll explain meditation in a very wide number of ways. And you can always download those talks from the net and maybe listen to them when you've got some quiet time for your own practice. So beginners, newbies, highly recommend guided meditation. I know with the weekend retreat that I'm teaching in Armadale, Dana Grove, which is just opposite the monastery, I've been told that the meditators really like to have guided meditation. So even though they'll be sitting there for several hours of the day, for maybe half an hour each day, we'll do a guided meditation. This is the way to go. And after a while, you won't need guidance. You'll be able to meditate like champions. And you can sort of let that stuff go eventually. But it's a good place to start. That's what I'd recommend as well. So we'll start with a guided letting be meditation, and afterwards we might have a few questions if anyone has them, and then I'll give a short talk on something. I don't know what yet. So I hope everyone's happy and satisfied and content with all that. Right. We'll dim the light. And usually, most of you know that if you haven't been here before, we usually sit for about half an hour. And it's about 9:15 now, so running quite early today, which is fine. There's always something to take up the time later on. So for the moment, we'll just start by getting comfortable, physically comfortable. Nothing quite pleasant in here actually, it's not too cold, not too hot, but you can get your clothing nice and comfortable. And we'll just sit here for a few moments and just bring the awareness inwards. So with your eyes closed, your body comfortable, and just remember that you're here to relax. Nothing much more important than just to relax at the beginning and all the way through at the end. In your mind right now. Whatever it is, just watch it. See how it changes, fades away, replaced by something else. Staying with whatever's there, whatever's in here. the busyness of the day to dissipate the stress, the worries, the anxiety, by letting it be, just fades away like smoke in the wind. Whatever the mind grasps, you let it be, you let go with kindness. Just returning to the present moment, watching, letting be. body relax as the mind stops doing things. Begin to appreciate the silence, in the room. Start to get sleepy. Let the sleepiness be. After a while, you notice the contentment starts to grow, and you relax, and it gets easier. coming back to the present moment, letting it be. Gratitude to have this time to do absolutely nothing. Wondering how much time is left in the sit. Just remember, it's none of your business. all your business in this present moment. Comes when you notice the mind slowing down. You notice the space between the thoughts. Just moments of silence. And once again we let them be. They grow. Always remember to end the meditation here or at home with contentment. It's always good enough. So just reflect for the next couple of minutes. Relax. Good. So you can veg out for a couple of minutes if you want, have a stretch, go to the toilet, whatever you need to do. Okay. Anyone want to ask any questions about specifically about meditation at this point? Everyone have a nice sit?
It's so comfortable. You just go to sleep.
I know. It's that time of night as well.
No, it's not anyway.
Yeah. Good. Oh, that's a good sign. At least you're relaxed. Yeah. Hi, Bob.
Body sweeps.
Yeah.
There seem to be only a few of you would like to do a body sweep before a meditation.
Ah, right, okay, yeah. Certainly, it's not something. I don't practice it myself, so I think generally you can only teach what you practice yourself.
Yeah.
As a monk, as a meditation teacher, so that's why I thought I'd do what we did tonight, because a lot of what my practice is just about contentment and making peace with the present moment. Basically letting be is just another way of saying silent present moment awareness. So if you're familiar with Ajahn Brahm's style of teaching when it comes to meditating on the breath, he says to build up your still have your mindfulness in the beginning before you try and take up an object like as subtle as the breath. So, you just by making peace, you basically make the foundations. Well, I like the words you used, because which is to, you sort of fill the mind. You fill the mind with the present moment, with the silence. And when the mind is so full of that, then it's very easy to watch the breath. And you can go into some of the deeper states of meditation, very deep if you we practice that. I think I think it's a rare meditator that can say that they don't need to pay any attention to the basics. It's always good to go back. But it's also good to try new things as well and see how you can stay with the breath as well. Have a bit of fun. Practice some things. I've got a meditation group as well on Friday. So I've got a whole run of guided meditations to do now. So so any feedback is welcome. But you're all just too happy and peaceful. So I must have done the right thing. Yeah, so I'll go to the current prison on Friday night and teach the it's more of a men's group there, it's just a bunch of guys, maybe half a dozen or so usually come and
sorry, where
do
you go
from? This is Karnak Prison.
Oh,
Karnak
right.
Prison Farm. So if you head off down Kingston Drive past the monastery, it's a good 10 kilometres into the forest, and there's just this farm in the middle there, yeah. So they breed cows.
Not public in there though, is that?
Well they let me in. I don't know how public I am, but we've got a roster of people that go in. That's very much the same sort of thing. But it's a bit more informal than this. Often they just want to sit and have a chat, talk about whatever's in the news, what's going on in the prison, what's going on in the monastery. So I'll do that, and then I've got my weekend retreat the following weekend. This will be the first one I've done, so. So it brings me to something I was thinking about talking about. The idea of study and how it relates to the practice. I mentioned there's a few books up there. You've got a little library, you've got some books for sale and that sort of thing. They're often a good place to start learning about some aspects of Buddhism, meditation, and also the various other parts of the practice. We mostly focus on meditation here, but there's also the wisdom practice, the practice of morality and ethics and so forth. So with this weekend retreat coming up ahead, I threw myself into the books and started reading furiously and making notes and typing up my notes. And I, after a while, I thought, oh, this is just like being back at university. and I realised that, for all that it's important to sort of have a look at the Buddhist texts and so forth, what we're really learning how to do is just learning how to let go, how to relax, and make our minds peaceful. So that's sort of why I was a bit lazy today. I didn't come here with any plan for. I knew I wanted to talk about letting be in the meditation, but beyond that, I don't know. I thought I'd just see what comes to mind. I thought really what I'd like to bring into the talk is just the idea of happiness and how important it is, and how it's a beautiful thing to talk about. So what did I do today? I spent a lot of my time working with the guests as they come to the monastery, so they call up or send me emails. I've got a few of them here tonight. I've got two guests and a guy here today. So a lot of what some people might not see the job in the same way as I do, but I always feel like the best thing I can do is just to make people welcome when they come to the monastery, because I know that it just makes people really happy. They come and you get all sorts of strange and wonderful people turning up in all sorts of garb, and some people are sort of in the you know, just in their normal clothes, and some people come with outrageous hairstyles and stuff. Well, make them all welcome. If they want to stay, they can always book in, and we've got some rooms there. They can hang out with the monks. They can hang out and help keep running the monastery. Come to the, you know, do a bit of work in the kitchen and get lunch ready for it, and be part of the community. And so it gives me a lot of happiness just to be able to play that role. I've been doing the guest monk work now for, the accommodation monk for over a year now, and I really enjoy it. The other thing I do is I'm Ajahn Brahm's secretary, so I've written my own job description for that. That's make Ajahn Brahm's life easier. So it's great to be able to help my teacher, who's done so much for me and for this group, and dozens like it all over the world. He's in Hong Kong at the moment. He's giving talks at Cathay Pacific and universities and doing retreats and stuff. And he'll be back on Friday afternoon on Ajahn Brahm's bus. At the same plane in each each Friday, and so then he'll go to Nollamara and work all weekend there and give teachings and so forth. So such a busy guy. I really have a lot of happiness just being able to help make his life a little bit easier. It's a big part of the practice, being a monk.
You mentioned outrageous hairstyles. You guys are all bald.
That's right, but outrageous as it gets. We can shave our eyebrows.
Serious?
Yeah, we have to shave our eyebrows. We do. It's a Thai thing. It's a Thai thing, because...
Wow.
Yeah, I had in... the Burmese were invading Thailand a couple of hundred years ago, so... dressing up as monks. So the Thai said, "All right, well, we'll sort this out by our monks are going to shave their eyebrows."
Oh.
And of course, the Burmese just shaved their eyebrows too, so I don't feel like too very much. But that was sort of that tradition has been handed down throughout the centuries. There you go, a little bit of tradition there.
I've never noticed that.
Oh.
Not the shaved eyebrow.
Oh.
No,
yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't noticed
either.
That's why you became a monk.
Why I became a monk? Yeah, sure. This is the question everyone wants to ask. I'm quite happy to talk about it again. It'll certainly give me something to talk about, because it's a bit of a long story. So, okay. I grew up in an irreligious family, so we didn't have any... My parents had no religion themselves, and so it was never pushed upon me as a kid. But I guess at university level, when I started university, I was a bit stressed out. So Mum suggested doing a bit of yoga, just a sort of stretchy, that sort of yoga. And I found it was all right, but I found that what I really enjoyed at the end was that at the end of each session, we'd just lie down and they'd play some Buddhist chanting. Just with a bolster under the head, and I found it so relaxing. I really enjoyed that memory of just the happiness of being relaxed, that stayed with me for a long time. So it was probably a couple of years later. I was at working as a programmer. I'd finished my degree, I'd gone off to Melbourne, interesting company I used to work for. We used to build library systems, so systems for running libraries, so the cataloguing and circulation, all that sort of stuff. But each Friday we'd have a game, so one person in the company would have to come up with some sort of game. So it could be anything from squeeze box dancing to painting classes. I think one woman came in and she had a bit of experience with the Vipassana group. I'm not entirely sure what teachers she followed, but she just sat down with us and they did the body sweeping meditation that we were talking about earlier, that Bob asked about earlier. And I thought, oh, this is really cool. It interests me. It's just that whole practice of stilling the mind and relaxing and focusing inwards. You know, not an incredibly introverted person, but I do like the realm within. I've always been interested in philosophy and psychology and various things to do with what goes on between your ears. Anyway, so just with those couple of experiences, when I finally got to a point where I was working at a really good company. I had my dream job. The place where I was doing the library systems, I saw the job ad and immediately gave my notice. So I really wanted to work for this company, and there was the job ad, and I did it, and I got the job. And after a while, I went, "Wow, this sucks too." It wasn't. I didn't find it fulfilling. Not that I don't still play around with computers. My sister got me a Raspberry Pi recently, so I still get to play around a little bit, but not for a living. I'm a professional meditator, so as I said, So anyway, so I'd broken up with my wife of 15 months or something. And at that point I went, I've done a bit of this meditation stuff, maybe that'd be a good thing to take an interest in. And I did, as I usually do with these sorts of things, I went to the bookstore and got a couple of books and started reading and tried to get a bit of a feel for what meditation actually is, which is really hard to describe sometimes. I know a lot of the new meditators are thinking, what's this whole letting be business? You make it as simple as possible, but you have to do the work to really understand. Have to practice. Have to have a daily practice to really get a feel for what meditation really is. And then I did a bit of searching on the web for, I downloaded a couple of MP3s for my iPod. This is back in the old days when they had the click wheel and everything. It was all very fashionable. And these sort of meditation, sort of new agey tunes sort of thing that I've listened to, and I find that quite nice. I'd sit out in the park and listen to them and have my 5 minutes of meditation. And I started looking on the web, and I came across, I think first I came across the BuddhaNet. It's actually an Australian design website, but they've got a lot of content there. And but then I came across Ajahn Brahm. I came across Ajahn Brahm's talks, the guided meditations, and the sort of Dhamma talks as well, talks on the theory as well of Buddhism. So they're all available on the website. He's still making them available on the new revamped website. So. I came across the Basic Method of Meditation, which is still in print and is still pretty much the go-to place for instructions on meditation on the breath, mindfulness of breathing. And that was really cool. I thought, this is something I want to get into. So I started developing a meditation practice. My job contract was up and my lease was up on the same day. This is when I was living in Melbourne. So I thought, it's time. So I headed back over to Perth. Caught the plane over with my dog and my cat, and I think I've had so much stress in the rest of my life. Oh, it was just horrible trying to get two animals and myself to the other side of the country. But I got here, and of course, the first thing I did was to start going to Nullumara, and that was a lot of fun because I was my parents had a house in Clotilde Street in Mount Lawley, and I had to get to Nullumara. I think I used to usually take the bus into town and then take the bus up Wanneroo Road and go there and hang out with all the people on a Friday night and on the weekends as well. And I really found the community there just such a great relief. I have to admit, for much of my life... Wait. Right, you don't have to leave. Good. I think my life up to that point was I had a lot of loneliness over that period, and I found just coming to a place where I could hang out with some good people who were there for good reasons and made some really good friends, And I've continued to make good friends over the years, through Nolimara, through the monastery, and here, and the monasteries I've visited all over the world, and I've got just so many friends now, so many good people I can just sit down and have a chat with. Anyway, so started against the Nolimara, and I did the beginner's course there. They have a 4-week beginner's course for meditators, and it's a really nice feeling, actually. With my weekend retreat, it's being run, as it almost always is, by Bianca, sorry. Yeah. She was the one who taught me meditation in the first place when I first started coming to Bodhinyana. So she's now organising a retreat for me to teach other people. So, yeah, it's nice the way the karma works sometimes. I heard one Friday night talk and decided to become a monk. So obviously I gave it a lot of thought. what happened then? I wrote to Ajahn Brahm and said I'd like to ordain. He said, yep, no worries. And then I, 2006, I came and stayed at the monastery for a month. And guest monk back then was Osama. I hadn't seen him for a while, but he made me welcome when I first came to the monastery. So that was February, so bloody hot. But it was wonderful just sitting down in the room by the dam and sweating and meditating and sweating more. No, we do have aircon in the main hall now, which is good for some. I can cope pretty well because I grew up in, well, I spent most of my summers here. I lived in Sydney, so hot there too, and also visiting family here in the summertime. But half of our monks are from Northern Europe, I think. So they do suffer quite a bit. So we've got aircon in the hall now. I've got quite a nice hut where I am. I'm in the only hut that's been built into the side of the hill, so it actually stays pretty cool. Maximum I ever get to about 25 degrees, so it's quite nice in there. Pretty cool in the winter time. It takes quite a while for it to warm up after winter. A nice hot introduction to the monastery. Went home and house sat for a few months, and came back to the monastery in 2006. And yeah, had some troubles. I think I discussed that last time I was here. But I got through that, and then I ordained. Okay, so we were talking about how long I've been a monk for. I ordained as an Anagarika, which is a trainee monk, basically, or training to be a monk. If you come to the monastery, you'll see him in the kitchen. There's one in white with a shaved head. They do all sorts of stuff for us. They're great. They drive us all over the place. They drive us here. They help us cook. When it's needed, they dig. They shovel cement. They do all sorts of things. And then after a year, we give them ordination as a novice. So it's a little bit over a year for me. I think I ordained as an Anagarika in the February of 2007, and then February 2008 I was a novice, and then it was 1st of June 2009, which is when I became a fully ordained monk. So that makes, we count our seniority in terms of the number of range retreats we've had, so that's the July to October period usually. So I'm coming up to my ninth reigns. Next year is my tenth reigns, and I get a back cushion, I think. That's all the changes. Now, when you sit in line upstairs, the senior monks are notable for the fact that they have a nice square cushion behind their back. But it's a bit of a milestone to me. So when someone says they've got 10 reigns, it means not quite 10 years, but been there for 10 reigns. So yeah, does that answer your question? In brief. Good. Carry on. Is it possible to meditate too much? It depends if you're to start with, you don't want to hurt yourself, So yes, you don't, if you are sitting down and you have aches are okay, but if you have a bit of pain, it's always good to sort of not to push, not to sit in full lotus for, you know, 2 or 3 hours and then have to get knee replacement surgery. That's one thing. Yeah, the mental side is the other thing, is, and that's it is possible to be too hardcore, I think. I think I fell for that when I first started as an anagarika. You just, I mean, it's interesting, in our tradition, we come from the Thai forest tradition, so these guys are seriously hardcore. You got like Ajahn Mun back in the 1920s, 1940s, and he'd just sleep on a bamboo platform out in the forest. There'd, you know, there's monkeys and tigers and stuff all going around, but that really hardcore. And I think a lot of people come to Buddhism now, and they might read the books about these old masters, and I know I did, and you can just try too hard. So what I recommend is just to start out. I know some of you are here for the first time, so I'd highly recommend just maybe 15-20 minutes a day. If you can develop that, that'll take you a long way. The nice thing, I think, about meditation is that you do get results early on, which is nice. You don't have to sort of plug away for years and years. But if you do plug away for years and years, yeah, then you can start to maybe stretch that out, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. You might decide that you want to do a weekend retreat. And it's good. The Buddhist Society has now got, I think, 5 or 6 a year. So there's plenty of room on those retreats, I think. They're taught by not the most senior monks. They usually do the 9-day retreats. And if you feel at some point you'd like to sort of stretch yourself, the 9-day retreats are a really good way to focus for a long period of time. 9 days can seem like a really long time, actually. I think a lot of people find. And then, yeah, there's always the opportunities to come and stay at the monastery. Get a taste for monastic life. I know what you're saying in terms of doing too much. Yeah, you can, but it's a personal thing, and it differs from person to person. But I think the main thing is that if you're becoming more peaceful, more happy, more joyous, then keep going, enjoy yourself. It's also good to have contact with the teacher as well. Someone like Ajahn Brahm might give you some good advice if you're getting quite deep meditation. There's some very interesting states, and people might not understand what they mean. And things like nimittas. Sometimes you'll be sitting there, and you might have a very bright light in front of you. It seems like someone might be shining a torch in your eyes or something. You open your eyes, and there's nothing there. Well, what was that?
And then again, because I get that quite often.
Really?
Yeah, and I think, first of all, I thought somebody out there shining.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, these are the, if it is the same thing, it's described actually quite well in the Basic Method Meditation in Ajahn Brahm's books, and that's why I mentioned those particular states, because it's good in those sort of situations to ask someone who really knows what they're not talking about. But just have a flick through that Basic Method of Meditation. It's just a pamphlet, and see if it reflects something similar to your experience. So, hello.
How often do you meditate, and how long for?
Oh, okay. Okay, so during the we sort of had 2 periods in the monastery. We had the rains retreat that I've mentioned, which is the 3-month period, and then there's the rest of the year when we have duties and various things to get done. But I find for myself, I like to sit a couple of times a day. I often work in the mornings, and then get back after meal, have a bit of a rest, and then I have a fairly long sit, maybe an hour and a half, which is, like I say, something you build up to over time. And I usually, in the evening as well, maybe have another sit as well, so maybe on a on a normal day, maybe 3 hours. So that's a reasonable amount. And then during that three month period, just go for it. We have so much free time. We won't be here during that period. So I think we usually have just lay teachers coming in as well during that period. Is that right? So yeah, and no prison work or Ajahn. The really nice thing is that Ajahn Brahm, our teacher, he stays in the monastery too. It's part of our rules actually that you have to stay in the monastery unless there's a good reason. He does duck out for a couple of days here and there. But we get plenty of teachings, encouragement, and we've got just lots and lots of time. So just put in as much time as you can through the day. Obviously, if you get you can get all sorts of problems from sore back to that to all sorts of strange things happening in the mind. But that's when we really put in a lot of effort. And also we have the monks are allowed to have 2 week retreats as well throughout the year. And that's between the moon days basically, so 14 or 15 days. And during that period they're just back at the hut, often they'll get another monk to feed them. So we have basically one meal a day, sometimes a light breakfast. But the monk will bring their friend their bowl of food, so they don't even have to come up to fetch their food, and we've got lots and lots of time for meditation. We don't actually have scheduled meditation. In some monasteries there'll be a schedule. You do two hours in the morning, and then 2 hours in the afternoon, and 2 hours in the evening, whatever. But we're encouraged just to spend time back at our huts by ourselves, and just to put in the time there. And we're very lucky because the monastery has been built up over so many years. There's not that much to maintain, so yeah. So it definitely varies from monk to monk how much meditation I'll do. Yeah.
Sorry, did you say you have 1 meal per day?
1 meal per day, yeah, that's right. So generally we take we have breakfast at 6:30, so for me that's usually just a mug full of Nutri-Grain, a cup of coffee, and then off to work. And then we have one main meal which is about 10:30. And everyone's welcome to come. Every day we have that. So people come, they bring food, like a plate of, could be anything from curry puffs to pasta to, we get really good curry puffs, and to, sweets and fruit and that sort of thing. And then the monks eat upstairs, and the people that come for the day, they can sit outside and enjoy a nice meal. Perfect weather for it these days. I think we've got a week of just beautiful days. It's going to be, eventually it gets cold and everyone tries to huddle inside next to the wood fire. But but basically have one meal, and that simplifies things. After the after midday we can go back to our huts. We don't have to come out for any particular purpose unless it's Dhamma talk, or we have tea. We also have tea in the evening at 6 o'clock. 6 to 7, so you can have juice or chocolate or some jelly beans or something like that. Cool. Hey.
Hi. Just a question I've always wanted to ask someone in your position. Just about money and how you guys go not handling money.
That's the bag man over there. It's such a relief. It's such a relief not to need to go out there and slave away to make a living. We all of the work we do is just part of our chores, so we're rewarded in kind by the kind people who come to feed us and donate money, and our characters who drive us around and pay our bills and get us to the doctor appointments and all that sort of stuff. I think it's a great liberation. I think it's a real shame that in a lot of monasteries it's not really, especially places like back in Thailand. I think a lot of the it's just accepted most of the monks would handle money these days, except for the more the hardcore monks, the Thai forest tradition, who have sort of we've come down the line from. Yeah, so it's not that hard, no.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to sort of, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things you can't just go out and splurge on, you know, if you want to, you know, if you want some special food or you know, whatever. Yeah, it's not hard. It's not hard, but it just means you're limited in what you can go out and indulge in, really.
You still get to see. I mean, I imagine this is an obvious question, but you're saying the good curry puffs come. Do you still find yourself coveting, obsessing, clinging to?
Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, I think. I think a lot of monks, yeah, it's easy to obsess about the food. It's not. Yeah, that's right. You gotta. Yeah, I mean, it's okay to enjoy the food, but if you're. Yeah, if you're sitting up and it's 7 o'clock at night and you want curry puffs, then you're gonna have a bit of suffering, but. I think that's kind of normal. That, yeah. Like yesterday, I was walking through the monastery and I said, oh, what a wonderful day, you know. So, what's wonderful about it? Well, sun shining and the flowers are blooming, and I sort of felt a bit guilty, you know. I'm not allowed to enjoy a nice day. I think at the end of the day, it's okay to enjoy yourself. It's good to. That was one of the things I was thinking about in terms of a topic tonight. About when I was talking about happiness, it's very easy to get into fault finding, to look at what's wrong with what's around you, but I think it's fine just to appreciate, you know, whatever comes along. Yeah. So we've got a few days of really nice weather, and then it's going to get cold and wet, or cold and dry.
Yeah.
But
when you reach a certain age, that you cannot meditate and things like that, what you do?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. In terms of getting old and the practice, most people can find a comfortable posture, I think. I mean, I use a chair, not because there's anything particularly wrong with my legs, but because it just turned out to be the most comfortable position for me, and I found after a while that if I use a lumbar roll, it's quite good, supports the back, keeps it upright. But we do have a couple of monks in the monastery in their 70s. No one older than the 70s yet. So that'll happen. Poor old Upasana, he's an American monk, grew up in Brooklyn, Jewish guy. So he's in his 70s. I think he ordained at 70. And he's wandering through the forest and fell flat in his face. And he's now in a neck, walking around in a neck brace. Hopefully, wish him well. But yeah, I mean, obviously, with as you get older, balance is a bit of an issue, and it is a forest. It's we've tried to fix up the paths a bit around his area, but we might have to build or find some accommodation that's a bit closer to the centre of the monastery, make life a bit more comfortable. There's been talk of turning our ladies' guest quarters into an old monk's building. That would upset a few people because they like to come. So we might have to build something else. I don't know. But we look after ourselves. We look after our monks, whether they're young or old, whatever they need. We take them to the doctors if they need. I know Ajahn Brahm says if you're really you know, sick, you're really in pain and you just can't meditate, then it's often just a good idea, a good practice for a monk to contemplate the body, contemplate the what we call the five aggregates. That's a fairly lofty thing, but yeah, just seeing things as not really under control. But I'm 39. I turned 40 in a couple of months, so I've got hopefully got a little while before I get too infirm. You never know. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen. But no, a person is still very cheerful. You can't hold a man down. It all works out. Oh yeah, geez, I've been rabbiting on. Oh, I'm very impressed with my dog. It's almost half past. We've got a few minutes left.
What's the longest you've ever sat
meditating? Oh, I don't know. You can get a bit competitive, I think, you start having a... Oh, look, I don't think I'll just sit for more than 2 hours at a time. I've probably done walking meditation longer than that. Each of our huts has a long walking path. It's another nice practice to pick up, especially if you've got a bit of a big garden or a little park nearby. Doing walking mindfully back and forward across in a small area. And you can do letting be, present moment awareness, often focusing on the feelings in the feet, that sort of thing. So I was really into my walking meditation for a while, so I've done some long walks. But yeah, sitting at 2 hours is probably as long as it's comfortable for. I think, if you're really going well and you get deep into meditation, monks can go for hours, days, if you get really, really deep into samadhi. But I don't see any point in sitting longer than is comfortable, really. And I think that does increase over time. Yeah. So, yeah.
Questions
down here? Yeah,
you mentioned you don't have aircon there.
The monks rules that we're not allowed to. Oh, I think we're not allowed to swim for pleasure. So I think, and also there's only a couple of dams, and we use that for our own sort of not drinking water, but we don't really encourage our monks to go swimming there. but it is hard to beat the heat sometimes.
Why is swimming for pleasure?
It's in the rule. It's in the books.
Tell them how many rules you have to follow.
We have 227 rules. And one of them. I'm allowed to frolic in the water. I had to ask Arjun Brahmali. He's the head rules guy at the moment. But
he's a fun person as well.
Yeah, that's right. But I think a lot of the monks will come up and just meditate in the hall now we've got the aircon in there. So you'll walk into the hall and everyone's staked out their seat, there's six air conditioning units, each one has a pile of cushions under it. You don't mess with someone's air conditioning spot. But for me, I'm fine. I don't really need air conditioning. Like I say, my hut doesn't get that hot. And generally speaking, I'm used to the Perth weather.
Were you talking about the meditation hall is now air conditioned?
Yeah, big message.
It isn't needed, sure.
No. Well, Ajahn Brahm has a bit of compassion for those Nordic monks I mentioned. We've got one from Finland, two from Norway, we've got a Swiss guy. Yeah, so it's pretty. No. They find that. Even Venerable Bardo from New Zealand finds it very difficult. But to be fair, I think he had a thermometer. No, he had an electronic device that will tell you about the peak of the heat during the day, and he put it away in the shade, away from any walls that might radiate heat. And I think it got up to 45 degrees.
Yeah.
And
that's what you're going to need eating aircon.
Yeah. So he's been.
Don't get aircon in Thailand.
No.
Exactly.
They have been putting in some what do you call that stuff? Rock wall or something in the ceilings.
Yeah.
Take the roof off. Put in a bit of that just to help, yeah. But you have to, it is kind of a part of our practice to have a bit of endurance, yeah, even if it's a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. John Brown always said, Buddhist air conditioning.
Oh, yes. Keep it cool, huh?
Yeah.
And then when it's cold, you have a cool head and a warm heart. That's right. Yeah. Hey.